So, continuing on from what we were discussing yesterday, I had a story coming to mind, a traditional Zen story. For the translators, is it okay? Am I speaking too quickly? Or? No? Okay. So it's a traditional Zen story. And one that is often, when I read commentaries about it or hear people talk about it casually, I sometimes think that it's easily misunderstood. The story, as sometimes words can be misunderstood. And it's also misunderstood because it's a vast story that's very short and simple, but so much is implied in it. And it has, it's like a fan that unfolds. And there are different aspects to it. So it's a very good story to use in a situation like this, but it can also be misunderstood or misinterpreted. So, and it applies to what we were discussing yesterday. Although I say this regularly, I'm always saying the same thing. So. Every story applies every day. And yet it's different every day. When on Friday, Friday morning, we went to visit the castle in Lisbon, which I had never been to before. I'd walked in the neighborhood, but I had never gone into the castle. And something really basic but and obvious, but which was very clear there, was every step we took, there was a different perspective. There's such a view of the city from there, and it's open, that you keep getting a new look on the city. And in a very direct, unavoidable way. It was a perfect place to put a castle, in fact. And so each of these stories that I'm talking about, that I tell, have that same quality. And they're all looking at the same thing, but from different angles. And probably if I talked about this story before, and if I talked about it tomorrow, I would not say the same thing. And I don't know what I will say now, but we will see. So first I will read you the story. It's very brief. And then we will discuss it. So it's the seventh case in a collection of stories called the Mumenkan, or the Gateless Barrier. And the title is, Joshu Says, Wash Your Bowls. Once a monk made a request of Joshu. Joshu was a teacher. I have just entered the monastery, the monk said. Please give me instructions, Master. Joshu said, Have you had your breakfast? Yes, I have, replied the monk. Then, said Joshu, wash your bowls. And as always happens in these stories, the last line is, the monk had an insight. That's the story. It doesn't have to be a monastery. It doesn't have to be a monk. What is wonderful about this teacher, Joshu, who lived in the 6th or 7th century in China, is that the stories involving him are alive in our everyday lives. We all eat breakfast, we all have dishes to wash, we all have questions. The questions are asked very basically, nothing exotic, nothing sort of what is the essence of Zen, or what is the relative and the absolute, no strange words. It's all very basic, ordinary. And that is the quality of this teacher, Joshu. All of the stories involving him have that simplicity and directness. So this could be any one of us. In fact, it is us. And we meet someone who we think knows something, someone who has an experience that we feel we don't have, someone who is true, is more experienced and advanced in the practice or on the way, and we ask them, please give me some instruction. I'm new here. Please give me some instruction. Probably in this story, this person asking the question was probably new to, was just meeting Joshu, but probably was not new to the practice. Probably had some experience. And I say that because of the ending where they say he has some sort of insight. That reflects the fact that he probably had done a lot of seeking and had some experience and deep practice already. Not necessarily, but probably. Now, the story can be taken on different levels. On one level, very simple, give me some instructions. The teacher says, have you had breakfast? You've just arrived, have you had breakfast? And very simply, he answers, yes, I have. He had his breakfast already. And so the teacher says, well, wash your bowls. We have breakfast, and what do? We stand up and wash our dishes. Someone arrives to your home, and you say, would you like some tea? Have you had lunch? And you answer. Very direct, simple. If it remained on this level, it probably would not be in a collection of what is considered a classic of Chinese literature. And we would not be talking about it today, probably. And probably when you hear the story, you sense there's something there. Even the fact that you don't understand. What? Why is she telling this story? What? What insight did he have? That tells you that there's something there. Trust that interrogation that you have. Very subtle, even. Trust that. That's the spark that can lead to the candle, the light, the moment of insight. So, Joshu says to him, when he says, "Give me some instruction, have you had your breakfast?" It looks like a question, and it is, but he's giving him instruction with that question. He's answering directly the monk's question. The monk says, "Yes, I have." Obvious response. He might have said, "No, I haven't." If he had said, "No, I haven't," Joshu's response would have been different as well. He might have said, "Then go to the kitchen." I don't know. He might have said, "Sorry, there's no food left." He might have said, "Why not?" I don't know. He's responding directly to the question. Response. "Have you had your breakfast?" "Yes, I have." However, it seems that the moment of insight doesn't come there. When the story says the monk had an insight, it's not at that moment when he responds, "Yes, I have." It could be there. He's responding directly to the question. No gap, we say. No hesitation. No thinking, "Oh, what should I answer? This is a deep question. What is he really saying to me? Shall I say something clever? What is the Zen response?" There is no breakfast. There is no one to feed. There is no food. He doesn't say that, the monk. So at least we know he's not caught in that trap. This also might be in. This might reflect the depth of his practice, that he is not stuck in that aspect, that when we encounter that aspect, it's not that that's not true, but when we meet that for the first time, it's so wonderful. We feel so free of all of this people who are hungry, of needing to eat, that we miss, we forget about the other aspect, and we become stuck in this, "There's no food, there's no one hungry," or "There's nothing to do. When you're hungry, eat," which is true. We tend to forget the other aspect. So, it looks like the monk is not stuck there. So Joshu says, "Okay, then wash your bowls. If you've had your breakfast, wash your bowls." Traditionally in monasteries, as I said earlier, they eat in three bowls. They take their meals in bowls. And after they've eaten, each one washes his own bowls at his seat, his or her seat. We don't, unfortunately, do that here. Someone else washes it for us. So Joshu doesn't say to him, take your bowls and have someone else wash them. He says, you wash your bowls. Because in fact, no one else can wash your bowl for you. We have this illusion. I have this illusion that someone is washing my dishes for me every morning and every meal. It's true, someone is. We have a crew of people who wash the dishes. But ultimately, I have to wash my own bowl. When we have these three bowls that we eat from, if we don't eat all of the food that is in the bowls, we are sitting in our seats like this, and we are being served here, and we're eating here, and when it's time to wash the bowls, the server comes with water and pours it into the bowl, and we wash all of the bowls with that water. If we hadn't emptied the bowls, we would have trouble washing them. If we left food in those bowls, we couldn't wash them properly. So we have to eat everything that is in the bowls. And that's part of the trick of this method of eating, is not to take too much food. If you take too much, you can't finish it. If you don't take enough, you will still be hungry. You have to take just the right amount. It's possible in this story that the monk hasn't emptied his bowls. I had breakfast, yes. And his bowls are still full of it. And so Joshua is saying to him, well, wash your bowls. Before I give you some instruction, wash your bowls. There is another anecdote from Zen literature, where a government official who has studied a lot about Zen comes to visit a master, comes to have tea with the master. And someone told me this scene, this is in a film now, this film 2012, about the, have you seen it? So you know the scene I'm going to. I have not seen it, but someone told me this. So he comes to have tea, and the government official is expounding, telling all his knowledge of Zen. And the master is serving him tea. And the man keeps talking and talking and talking, and he keeps pouring the tea until it overflows. And the government official is stunned. In the film, how does it go?
That's the moment of the patient. It reads like that. The disciple is asking the master to give him the permission to go somewhere. I think it was a group's meditation from a Zen story to the Buddhist, to the Zen tradition.
Okay. It's the same idea. Yeah. I asked the people who told me about this in the film, I said, are they using that as a metaphor for the film as a whole? And the film is about the great catastrophe that will befall the Earth in 2012. some apocalypse that is predicted to arrive in 2012. So I said, oh, is this a metaphor for humanity in the place of the government official blindly letting the universe, the world, overflow with our ignorance? Apparently not. I don't know why it's in the film, but apparently that's not the metaphor for the film.
It's not
as sophisticated
as that.
It's not? Okay. Huh, okay. And that's not very sophisticated, actually, my interpretation. But, in Joshu's case with the monk, he is at once giving him instruction and pointing out to him to receive instruction, wash your bowl. And as the story it goes on, one sentence to the next, the monk is gaining in awareness. He is becoming aware that it's just this. The instruction is just this. Just what is at hand. It's neither bad nor good. He arrives, he answers, he asks, he receives an answer, which is a question. He responds, he receives an answer. Very simple. The instruction is very simple. Had he not asked, he would not have received that instruction. And had he asked at another moment, he would have received another instruction. This is the beauty of Joshu. Or of Zen in general. Or of any genuine teaching, I would say, in any tradition, is the vitality. It's always different. The only thing that all of the stories share, the only thing that every moment has in common with another moment, is its difference. The only thing we all have in common are our differences. And to experience that, we have to empty our bowl and wash it. If our bowl is full from the previous meal, we can't receive the next meal. If we are still full of breakfast, we can't have lunch. And we very naturally know that. We would not think of eating breakfast and then 5 minutes later starting lunch. There's no problem there. And although we don't always do it, we know that we need to wash the dishes after one meal so that they will be clean for the next meal. Sometimes we don't. Sometimes they pile up. But eventually we have to wash them. meditation, we tend to realize that it's more efficient, easier to wash them immediately than wait and wash them all when they pile up until we don't have another cup left and wash them. So in this story, there is just the very basic interchange, which is at once, which is the instruction. That is the teaching. Just this is the teaching. I was riding on the metro in Paris recently, and some of the trains, there was a voice that is recorded, and at some stations when the train stops, it says something like attention descendant du train or something. What is it? Does anyone remember? On line one it's always something about beware when you're getting out of the train at this platform. And in English it's often you might, in some place that's dangerous or slippery, it might say, watch your step. And in the entrance to Zen monasteries, or traditional Zen places, there might be a sign that says, look below your feet. So I was thinking in the metro, if everyone really heard that voice saying, watch your step. Paris would be this unbelievably holy, sacred place. It would be Jerusalem and the Taj Mahal and Mecca and Varanasi and Bodh Gaya and everything all in one. That's really all we need to do, is look below our feet. Or at the castle, there was a sign once that there was stairs sometimes that were very steep. And on one, there was a little sign of someone falling backwards, and it was made to show you that you should be careful on this staircase. The same thing is true anywhere. We could have that sign everywhere. Not that every place is dangerous, but every place you step is the place of enlightenment, the place of awakening. And if you can become aware of that, what happens? We're not aware. We're not paying attention, usually, where we step. In Paris, you have to be careful where you step because there's dog shit on the street. But people aren't paying attention really to the ground beneath their feet. And I forgot on Friday night when I was showing the walking meditation to the three people who were new receiving instruction. I forgot to mention to them that in the walking meditation, we are not going anywhere. We're not walking to get somewhere or get something. We are just experiencing our foot on the ground. The Vietnamese teacher Thich Nhat Hanh says, it's as if your feet are kissing the ground. We walk as if we are caressing or kissing the earth. That is to really look at the ground where we are. Because that is the ground of awakening. And if we really feel the ground with our foot, we realize we are the ground. We are the ground of awakening. It's not somewhere else. It's not someone else. And when we do experience that, the ground we treat differently. The person in front of us walking, we treat differently. The person behind us, we treat differently. The person next to us, we treat differently. And that's why I thought the story in the film was pointing to that, but I guess it was not. If we wash our bowl, we are completely open to receive whatever is offered. This moment, this ground, the person in front of me. But if my bowl is full of my ideas about the person in front of me, I have no space to receive. If I'm full of my ideas, I have no space to receive. And the same is true of myself. In fact, it starts with myself. If I am full of myself, in English we have an expression, someone is full of himself. It means someone who is arrogant, self-centered, pretentious. But in fact, being full of myself doesn't have to be displayed in that way. It can be displayed in feeling sorry for myself. It can be displayed by fearing the other. It can be displayed by letting others abuse me. I'm just giving examples of what it means to be full of me, to be full of an idea of me. Or the idea that I have arrived somewhere. The monk, I have arrived, he says. He has an idea that he has arrived somewhere. I have obtained something. That's to be full of myself, too. There is nowhere to go. There is nothing to obtain. It's you're here and you have it all. Of course, you have to go through all of the, like I said, to get to Coimbra from Lisbon, you have to cover every centimeter of the way. So first we have to see a bowl is a bowl. Right? In the story, I said there are different ways of seeing the story. A bowl is a bowl. A glass is a glass. But if we then wash the bowl of our ideas about it, if we can not be fixed to what my idea of a glass is, to really look, what is it? To really question, what is it? This is the real one. What is it? Who is it? Then we come to a point of, I don't know. It's not a glass. It's not a glass like I think it is. That is to empty the bowl and wash it. Empty it of my ideas of it. And then I am not limited by my ideas of the glass. And I can freely experience the glass for what it is. You can apply this to yourself. In fact, that's how I would advise you. Then you can freely experience who you are without the limitations of who you think you are. And then you are just you. Just this. And that is how this story of Joshu works. We can see it as just what it is. A question and an answer. Did you have breakfast? Yes. Wash your bowls. And then we can see it as, I don't know. I don't know what is being said here. The story doesn't make any sense. If it's not just what's being said, what is it? What insight? What instruction? And once we have gone through that process, then we can experience we can experience the story as it is and the story as it isn't. It's just what it is, with no limitations. The problem with talking about these stories is we have a risk of saying too much. And it's tricky to know what is too much, what is not enough, what is the right amount. So I will suggest that that is enough. But if you have questions or comments, then the talk continues. But as for what me filling up your bowls, I think this is enough. There are a lot of Zen stories involving bowls, actually. And as I'm sitting with this, I'm thinking of others that come. But that is the case because in the everyday life of the monastery where these stories were taking place, the bowls were very present. So it was an obvious thing to use in stories. In our situation, we wouldn't say bowls, we would say plate, or cup, or something. And sometimes we think in these stories, it's very exotic, and there's something mysterious, and they're talking about something that I can't possibly relate to, but that's not true. The sign at the entrance to the zendo that says in Japanese or Chinese, "Look below your feet," is the same as the woman's voice in the metro saying, "Watch your step when you go out." It's the same. But we don't receive it in the same way. But we could. And we really just need to look around. The meditation hall is all of life. And the earth is the altar. This community, this group that I have created is called the Wildflower Community. To reflect that the ground of awakening is everywhere. And the flowers bloom everywhere. We can't stop them. People try to get rid of wildflowers all the time. And it doesn't work. And we never know what they will look like. And each one is unique. We never know when the lights will go out, right? And we don't know when they will come on. It was a good experience, wasn't it? Yeah. It was a very interesting experience. And we just go with it. We just function according to what arises. That's Joshu's instruction as well.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the entire Zen instruction is to do with the moment of death. Everything. Because the fact is that every moment is the moment of death. So if we truly see the ground below our feet, if we truly see that is the ground of awakening, then the great matter, as it's called in Zen, which is the question of life and death, as we chant at night, life and death are of supreme importance. That is the ultimate question in Zen. The great matter is resolved. If we truly experience the ground beneath our feet. In terms of specific practices of, as in some traditions, sitting in a graveyard, or I don't even know, you know more about the Tibetan practices around that than I do. No, there are no. The Zen approach is that if you truly experience this, you experience what is unborn and undying. And that is the great matter. And that will. Well, because there is nothing born and nothing dying, that question doesn't arise. Well, Zen would not, I mean, we wouldn't treat it as, of course, yes, this form dies. And this form is born, that's true. But what is, this form is limitless. If we try to break it down, where was I saying that? I don't know. We can't find the limits of this form even, and the beginning of it and the end of it. As Dogen, the great Zen philosopher, teacher, says, firewood does not become ash. So, the firewood is firewood, and the ash is ash. So this form is what it is, and then, of course, yes, it ends. This form, in its, there is a final breath. That's true. And it is burned, then, tradition. It returns to the elements from whence it came. There's no end to it in that sense. But yes, as this manifestation, this body does end. That's true. Mind is beginningless and endless. So even saying it continues. What is mind? This is the question. What is mind? The famous story, there is a famous Zen story of the student coming to see Bodhidharma, who brought Buddhism from India to China, and saying to him, again, my mind is not at rest, please put it at rest for me. And Bodhidharma says, okay, bring me your mind and I will do that. And so the student goes off and comes back after a certain amount of time. He says, I couldn't find my mind anywhere. And Bodhidharma says, I have put your mind to rest for you. What is mind? Where is mind? If you wash your bowl, then there's no problem. If you see the ground beneath your feet, there's no problem. This question is asked all over and over again in the stories. What is mind? What is Buddha? Sometimes the answer, what is Buddha? The answer is ordinary mind is Buddha. Sometimes, what is Buddha? No mind, no Buddha. Sometimes, everything is mind. As I said before, the only thing they have in common are their differences.